This is the Drive and Dish Podcast. Talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
Look at Tony Parker during the playoffs where he got destroyed by Chris Paul. He shot 29% and averaged 11 points a game during the playoffs. He was bad. In Eurobasket this summer, he was bad. I am not in on the Spurs. I'm really worried about their point guard play.
Kevin Rayfuse.
The Warriors, I don't know what the Warriors suddenly did to get disrespected all of a sudden. Because from game one to the last game in June, game six, this team was the best team in the NBA.
And Justin Kuzart.
And their rebounds, they had about 43 a game, which was like 18. So maybe that's what Tristan Thompson sees and says, look, you guys need help on the rebounding end. Like, pay me money.
Well, if you like that, you're going to love this.
If anything, this is the point where we all sit there and get real excited.
Let's go.
So when we do these intros, we like to, believe it or not, if you haven't picked up on it by now, actually base this off real life experiences. So with that, this might get him in a little bit of trouble, but here we go. Tim Tompkins went on a date last night with his lady friend.
Yes, I went on a date with my lady friend, and I feel like you guys can all agree with me on this. Have you ever dated somebody who always adds guacamole or adds breadsticks?
I always add guacamole.
Do you?
Because guacamole, yes, you have to.
Because I feel like whenever I take anybody on a date, ever, and they're like, would you like to add this? Would you like to add this?
Yes.
The answer is yes every single time.
Of course.
Yeah.
They know they're not paying for it.
So my feeling, well, if you weren't paying for it,
seriously, we had a company dinner one time, and I remember this specifically. Tim Tompkins got a Patron margarita in a to-go cup. You weren't paying for it.
Why the fuck?
Like, it's all about whether you're paying for it or not. Like,
oh my
I'm guilty
God.
Of this too, but
we went to a place that was, they had triple distilled water, and that's what we got for water. And my first thinking is like, this is just really expensive water for no reason.
Right.
Like,
but did you buy the water or was it free?
No, well, it was the company was paying for it, but yes, yeah, it was not free.
You had to buy water at a restaurant.
Triple distilled.
I triple distilled. Like, and it came in this cool like glass jug. And we had like seven.
Listen, if you I never understood paying tons of money for water. Like, I'm going to be straight up, and I know people in Europe,
I drink it out
I know
of the
in
sink.
Europe you can do this, but yeah, straight up, I drink tap water.
Yeah,
I
don't
mind. Or I'll put it in a Brita pitcher. Like, there's no, like, I get bottled water in the case of emergencies, and in the case, like, my home in Pennsylvania, the tap water is terrible. Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's one of the worst things about going home. The tap water is garbage.
See, the reason I like going home, and I've actually been looking forward to this, because I will be going home for the holidays, is when I'm home, because it's so much colder, the tap water that comes out is already chilled.
No, that's really nice. See,
it's great.
I'm like Kevin, fair. Where I drink the tap water, but I put it in a jug and I put it in the fridge.
Okay,
a few hours later, it's cold. Warm, the warm tap water I can't handle.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Like, I'm not out here drinking warm level tap water. I usually, if it's that warm, you just put ice in it or whatever. But I'm pretty much drinking it straight for the most part. Jacksonville's got good tap water.
But yes, back to the original question, do you add whatever it is they're offering? The answer is always yes.
Right.
It's the ebb and flow, man.
Okay. My feelings on this are, and I do this every single time I've ever let anybody pay for me when it comes to dinner, except for the company, because we'll let them do what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Is if I wouldn't order that if it was me by myself or me paying for myself, then I'm not going to order it just because somebody else is paying.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you shouldn't. It's all about a line. Like, to me, if you order, it's like, oh, if I get a thing of breadsticks or you get a thing of guacamole, all right. Because realistically, it's what? $2-3. I mean, it's extra, but sure. But it's like, you get the people who are like, oh man, can I get the high-end premium side? And oh, dinner tonight, I was usually going to get a burger, but now I'm going to get a filet
or
since
like,
I'm not
you
paying
get
for
the,
it.
Right. You could get the fries on the side for 99 cents, or you could get the bacon fries for $3.99.
Right.
It's like,
right,
okay.
Exactly.
Like, just take the bacon off your
if
burger.
If a restaurant
and put it
charges
in the
you three extra dollars for getting bacon on fries, you don't belong at that
you know,
restaurant.
Actually,
what about bacon cheesy fries?
This is really.
But $3?
Bacon what, cheesy fries? It's worth it.
You I know can see it. No. No, it's definitely worth it. I'm just saying it's going to really be $3
more. No, it won't
more.
Be $3
more. $1.50?
Question for you guys, though, and this is kind of back to the restaurant I went to question, and you brought up bacon, and that's what made me think of this, because this, I had this for the first time, pig ear. Have you ever had pig ear?
No.
It was so good.
My dog's had pig ear.
But this was like little thin strands, They were so good. You got to try them sometime.
Is it like pork rinds?
No. Oh, no. No, it was almost like bacon-esque where it was crispy and thin, mm-hmm. but it was a little chewy. So it was like a little bit thicker like a sausage, but it was like bacon sized, I guess.
We'll have to keep that in mind. Yeah. But you know what else is a little chewy? Sometimes the Drive and Dish NBA podcast, which you're listening to. My name is Kevin Rafuse. Joining me to my left, my co-host, Tim Tompkins.
The ball does not lie, but she sure does like guacamole.
And behind the boards, keeping us honest, as always, our producer, she's going to kill you. Our producer, Justin Kuzart.
Hashtag Shirley Temple did this.
Oh, Joel Embiid.
Yeah, dude is looking yoked as shit.
Dude, Joel Embiid, like...
All right.
No, guys,
we settled this on the last episode.
We're going to talk Sixers this episode. As much as I don't want to, like, we might as well not lie to our listeners. It's going to happen.
We will save it for one part. Move on. Okay. We usually like to shout out a listener for sending us a review because it not only helps us move up the ranks, but it shows the love and you know, it confirms our suspicions that you guys like us.
Or at least listen.
So today's review is from...
Yeah, the review this week comes from Australia. It's by Auntie Chung. He says, great work, guys. It's a 5-star review. Auntie Chung says, really enjoy your podcast. Lots of great insights. Keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you. That's very helpful.
Nice to the point.
Yeah, to the point. No, we love it. We love it when they're to the point. 5-star review. 5-star reviews are always good, Tim.
I really like those 5-star reviews, man.
Yeah. You didn't kill the reviewer. This is a first.
No, it was fine. Like, it wasn't very creative, but it was cool. All right. Like, we appreciate it nonetheless.
Only a little backhanded that time. We're making improvements here.
No, yeah. We really do appreciate them, though. They honestly, like, genuinely help us out. So, thank you.
We do appreciate it.
Yeah, I agree.
And it only takes a second. All you gotta do is, like, you're already listening to the podcast right now. All you gotta do is hit the little review button and leave a review. It takes as long as sending a text message.
Seriously, agreed. Like, if it doesn't have to be creative for us to read it. We read them all if you haven't figured it out by any way.
Just send the letter T and a 5-star, and we'll be happy.
Hey, there's actually one.
We're gonna get a review like that now. You know that, right?
We got one in the U.S. that we just got, and it's one word, and I can't wait to read it.
Dude, you're spoiling. It'll be their turn on the list soon.
Come on. I know. You can't jump the gun. There's a rotation.
There is a rotation.
But why don't we get into some news?
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
All right, first in your news, Derrick Rose played without his mask for the first time, but only because he forgot it at halftime. Derrick Rose says he was cleared to play without the mask, but decided to keep wearing it. John Hot Rod Williams has passed away at the age of 53. Williams had played for the Cavs from 86 to 95 before joining the Suns for a few seasons. He had been suffering from prostate cancer for the past 6 months. Miles Plumlee is apparently available for trade talks, according to the Bucks. Plumlee is averaging just 6 minutes in 15 games this season. Adam Silver says Kobe Bryant deserves to be in the 2016 All-Star Game. Kobe Bryant is a 17-time NBA All-Star and has won the All-Star Game MVP 4 separate times. Chris Stapps, Porzingis has signed an endorsement deal with Body Armor, just showing how exciting this young player is. The Golden State Warriors lost Saturday night to the Bucks, 108-95. They were on a 24-game win streak to start this season, and if you included the wins from last season, they were on a 28-game win streak. And lastly in your news, Al Jefferson has been suspended for 5 games for drug violations, and the drug of choice was pot. And that's your news for this week.
Something.
So I know I personally have some real mixed feelings on this, and I have for a long time. I'll preface this by saying I personally don't smoke, and it's not a moral thing. It's a simply I don't enjoy it thing. So why do you need to do something that you don't enjoy doing?
Right.
Part of being an adult.
You should do something you don't enjoy.
Right. Part of being an adult, like coming into maturity, was it just occurred to me one day, I don't enjoy it, so I don't need to do it anymore. Who cares that my older friends liked it? Anyway, Al Jefferson has been suspended by the NPA for violating their anti-drug policy for a pot violation.
Right, and so I guess since he's being fined money, right? Or I guess is
it's without pay, and it's 5 games without pay.
Which is, it's just crazy to me. Like, I feel like the punishment doesn't line up with other punishments that have happened this year.
All right, well, all right, here we go. I'm gonna take this one for a second. Well, it's just, it's insanely stupid, and it's symptoms of a larger problem in sports that goes beyond NBA. So I want to take this bigger than Al Jefferson. Al Jefferson getting suspended for pot. I mean, unfortunately, right now, it's in the rule book.
Right.
And as an NBA player, you need to know the rule book and you need to not do it. That being said, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of studies out there that shows that marijuana has medical benefits. And when you are an NBA player or an NFL player or an MLB player or any of these guys who are putting their bodies through the tough regimens that they are putting themselves through and are looking to get healthy off an injury, for the love of God, let them smoke pot. Who cares? It is currently legal in 4 states and Washington, D.C., the capital. It could be 5 at this point, actually.
So there are teams like with those.
No,
it's a league-wide standard for that sake. Like, if you play in Denver, you can't.
But here's my thing is so I'm looking at the rule book for their anti-drug program for the NBA, and they're saying you don't start getting suspended for this stuff until it's your 4th or 5th.
Yeah, you have to violate it a couple of times.
So does that mean this is his 4th or 5th time violating it?
But that doesn't matter.
And the point of the matter is we have these athletes and they get paid millions of dollars and we tell them that they need to be healthy and they need to be performing.
Right.
We will not let them smoke pot, a plant from the earth, which has known medical value. You cannot deny at this point, I don't care how anti-marijuana you are, if you don't think there's known medical value to marijuana, you are lying to yourself. But we will let them take OxyContin and Percocets and Vicodin and every painkiller in the world, including OxyContin, which, let's not sugarcoat it, OxyContin is synthetic heroin. Right. Painkillers have been statistically proven to lead to depression and heroin.
And addiction.
And it's all symptoms of a greater problem. So we will let these players do all sorts of chemicals that are made in laboratories that are known addictive drugs that will literally fuck your life up and put you in a cycle of addiction and damage your health. But we won't let an NBA player smoke a joint if they're dealing with an injury that where marijuana has none of those side effects. It's a culture problem that is bigger than the NBA. And frankly, I'm not going to mince my words here. It is wrong that marijuana is not both legal in the United States of America, but that the athletes are not able to use a natural healing supplement. It is wrong. And I cannot wait for the day that we see in our lifetimes, not because I'm saying I'm a huge smoker, but simply for the fact that marijuana needs to be legal, period.
Well, so the penalty won't come in. He was having some ankle issues or something like that, so the suspension wouldn't come in until he was healthy enough to actually play.
Right.
So they're saying he's going to be out for about 2 weeks. And with the suspension without pay, he's going to lose about a little bit north of $613,000.
I guess what bothers me, and Kevin just brought up all the medical stuff, and I've read a couple of different books on, they were autobiographies by athletes who had to take these painkillers in order to play, in order to live, because they're putting themselves through this grueling state, and those painkillers led to other addictions, with notably heroin, because like Kevin just brought up, the OxyContin is a synthetic or a mild version of heroin. And my thing with pot is, why is it okay that an athlete can go and drink an entire bottle of whiskey after a game, and that's fine, but you smoke a joint and you get suspended? I just don't see how those two correlate. When and the broader point is, you know, alcohol is so much more dangerous.
It's not even close how much more dangerous alcohol is than marijuana.
You don't even really do stupid things while you're high. When you're high, you like sit at home and you watch TV and you eat Cheetos. What's the word?
Stereotypical.
What was the guy that called the cops and they found him in a...
Yeah, because you see, like when you get high, you don't do anything wrong. But when you get drunk, you go out there and you feel like the king of the world and you drive drunk and you hurt people and you get in fights.
When's the last time you've ever heard of anyone smoking themselves to death. It is quite literally impossible to die on an overdose of marijuana.
You'll fall
in smoking
first.
Form, you will fall asleep first. It's scientifically, you would have to smoke pounds and pounds and pounds of marijuana in a half hour. Like, well, it's just not possible.
And so then the other thing,
you can literally drink yourself to death. I've seen friends, you know, everybody's had those nights drinking where you end up puking on a toilet. I get it. I've had it. Tim, you've had it. Justin, you've had it. I'm
it's
sure
been a while, but I've had it.
I've been fighting it.
Everyone one of our listeners have had that, but let's not mince words here. That is a literal form of alcohol poisoning,
right? And
you can die from that. That's not including even getting behind the wheel of a car,
right,
where you could crash your car, or you can hit someone else who's just out there minding their business, or you get more violent when you drink alcohol and can maybe get into a fight like Jahlil Okafor, or just not be yourself. You know, anyone that thinks marijuana is worse than alcohol is a moron.
Well, and so that was, you guys keep bringing up Okafor's fight. He got suspended for 2 games.
Right, because he got drunk and he got in a fight, and that's...
And this guy's getting suspended for 5 for smoking. It's
right.
Just, I feel like I get it, it's against the rules right now, so he should be punished. But I feel like the punishments don't align in the level of
the culture is
crime,
wrong.
I guess.
Period. The culture is wrong. Al Jefferson needs to know better. He broke the rules. Don't break the rules, you won't get suspended.
Right.
You got to stay, for better or for worse, you got to play by the rules that you're given. Marijuana is illegal in the United States. If any of us were, or at least in the state of Florida right now, if the three of us were to smoke marijuana and get caught,
we would
suffer the consequences.
Yeah.
That's the gamble you take when you do something that's illegal.
Yes.
However, it is really stupid that it's illegal, and the culture of giving everyone painkillers but not letting them smoke marijuana,
right,
but letting them drink themselves into oblivion is backwards, and it's wrong.
Well, and it's kind of bringing up, you know, we were talking about Al Jefferson and all that stuff, and then we're looking at the Hornets as a team as a whole, and they're overperforming. Like,
well, you could call it overperforming. So at the very beginning of the season,
we all wrote them off.
Well, we wrote them off, but that was before the season started. The very beginning of the season, you know, MKG went down with that injury, and everyone just said that they're done.
They're done.
Right? So I started watching a couple of Hornets games, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, these guys aren't done at all.
No.
Addition by subtraction. And then you look at Al Jefferson, too. So Al Jefferson being out, if you've been watching the way that the Hornets have been playing, is they have not been playing the way that they were the last couple of years, which a lot of it is dumping the ball down low to Jefferson, having Jefferson score. They've kind of been moving away from him, and I'm not sure if that's because they see him leaving in free agency anyway, or they know that they aren't going to offer him the money.
Right.
But this team has been so much more dynamic. They have Marvin Williams, who has come in and his three-point shot is up.
Right, and
PJ Harrison's playing really great. That's more minutes for Frank Kaminsky. Cody Zeller's a pretty viable center.
In his 4 starts at center, he's been, you know, because of Jefferson, in his 4 starts so far, he's averaging about 13 points, about 5 rebounds, shooting 51% from the field. But what you're saying is the reason this is working is they've got Batum, Lamb, Jeremy Lin, Spencer Halls, Frank Kaminsky, for what he's worth. They're all these great shooting percentage, and they're up to about 35% as a team, which is actually 13th in the NBA, which is then creating room for Kemba Walker to do his thing, and Al Jefferson when he's there. It's creating the space for him, and Nicholas Batum is playing like an all-star right now.
Well, we talked about maybe that would happen, and he had the contract year syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think Kevin has Nicholas Batum on one of his fantasy leagues.
I do. He's been a really solid pickup for me. I'm really happy with the way that's worked out, seriously. But we got a question. It's funny. Usually, this was a mailbag question, but we'll hit it here now anyway, because it's fitting, and there's no reason to hit the same question twice. Sarah, who else asked us, it was going to be a mailbag question, but she asked us, do you think the Hornets are going to last? Because she thinks they might make some noise in the playoffs. Do you guys think that, is this a quarter season of the Hornets overachieving? Or are they onto something here?
I think a quarter of the season in, that you have a pretty good idea of what most teams are.
Right.
Like, I think that this is it's a testament to the East and really the league as a whole, which seems to have just more evened out. You know,
there's
some good teams that aren't quite as good. There's some bad teams that are a little bit better, and I think that the Hornets, you know, but if you look at the East, what the top team is separated by the eighth by like 2.5 games.
Right. Well, so this is what I'm looking at, Tim, and you bring this up all the time when we're doing our division previews. So you say, what was the team's problems, and did they address it? Last year, they were the 4th fewest in made 3-point shots.
Nick, NKG took like what, 6 3-pointers last year?
At 6.1. Right now, they have drained 10 or more 3-pointers in 9 games. They reached 200 made 3-pointers this season, 5 games faster than any other franchise, any other season in their franchise. They're averaging about 9 threes, which is 7th in the NBA. They've also tied its franchise record for most made three-pointers in a game, which was actually 15.
Well, Marvin Williams has been really, like, this is not to steal a Kevin term, but low-key good this year as a stretch
right.
four.
Yeah. Right, and so this is Charlotte addressed what they needed. They fixed their problem that they had last year. They they're a top 10 in both offense and defense. And so
Steve Clifford should be considered for coach of the
absolutely.
Year. They're top 7 in both.
That you literally just took the words right out of my mouth. Steve Clifford absolutely deserves
they're
coach
number
of the
two
year
in
consideration.
The East.
Mm-hmm. He's playing. I mean, this team is overachieving. Like right. let's not take and maybe they are onto something and maybe accidentally stumbled onto something great. And I don't want to make this seem like we're taking away from MKG. MKG is one of the best defenders in the league, but this isn't the fit for Michael Kidd-Gilchrist because right. the fact of the matter is he can't shoot that well.
Well, this kind of reminds me of Nerlens Noel.
In what aspect?
That you have this player who is so gifted defensively, but
doesn't translate offense.
But doesn't translate offense, and you're like, well, that's fine, depending on who you surround him with. But an offensive-minded player, as long as the player that's substituting them is at least league average defensive, mm-hmm. might have a lot more value than a Noel, than an MKG in the league.
It's fair, it's valid, and I think in terms of the Sixers, I mean, we can get into this a little more later, but the short version is I think Nerlens fits the style of what the Sixers want to do. And when I think in that the Sixers are a three and paint kind of guy, and I think Nerlens, when you run the offense that the Sixers ideally ran last year, I think Nerlens' offensive abilities are leaps and bounds higher. I mean, this is a guy who went from averaging 10 points at the beginning of the season to when Ish Smith was running the point last year and they were running the offense they wanted to, was up around 16 to 18 points per game. So I think, yeah, he's never going to have a jumper, but I think he can be dominant around the paint, where MKG, he can't get away with that fact. He's kind of a black hole.
But MKG was... He made up for Al Jefferson's defensive weaknesses, which kind of reminds me of Noel in Okafor, where you have that defensive-minded player who's there to make up some ground on the lack of defensive abilities by the center. You know, the Serge Ibaka effect, if you will.
It just would have to work. And in the case of Nerlens and Jahlil Okafor, it's not working. But we don't need to get into that
then
now.
Then the other thing to remember with the East in general is that the Heat were in, like, first or second place at the beginning of this week, and now they're in 8.
Oh, I mean, look at the standings right now. Cleveland's 15-7. Charlotte's 14-8. Charlotte's 14-8. Toronto's 15-9. Indiana's 13-8. Chicago's 12-8. Atlanta's 14-10. Miami's 12-9. Boston's 13-10. Detroit's 13-11. This conference is very close. Cleveland, obviously,
not like last year.
Cleveland is chilling, and Cleveland is got to be the favorite to come out of this. But the East is getting better, and that's something we'll address later in Mailbag. But the East is getting better. It really, every team, and we're talking with teams that we thought were going to be better. You know, Washington is 9-12. We're talking about teams that we thought might be good this year and might take the leap are underachieving, but the conference as a whole is competing this year. It's good to see. There's not going to be some scrub that gets in on the 8 seed this year. They may not light the world on fire, but they're not going to be under 500 either.
Well, this kind of brings back to the whole argument of pace, right? So everyone is saying a faster pace is always better, and the pace in space, and there was the, you know, but then you go and you look at the Wizards this year, who are obviously struggling, and they're playing at this insane pace, but they fall into 27th defensive rating.
Their defensive efficiency is 103.4.
Yeah, their offensive rating isn't all that good either, and so everyone had always given the Wizards this really hard time about the offense that they were running. And I'm wondering if there's a certain amount of value in a coach running an offense. And maybe we were giving Randy Whitman too hard of a time last year when his offense was constructed for his personnel. And we called it vanilla and we called it bad. But then he goes and he changes it to the way that the league is. And it just seems like It just seems like maybe he knew what he was doing and he was running an offense that fit the players.
You're probably still the only person defending Randy.
Well, here.
I'm
not talking about him specifically. I'm talking about pace as a concept. And if it's the coach's job to run the fastest pace, or if it's the coach's job to realize the personnel he has and run an offense around that.
You have to work with what you're given at the end of the day. And you tailor your offense around your players. You can't tailor your players around your offense. It just won't work that way. You have to have the right fit. But I think in the case of Washington, I mean, when we saw them running and gunning last year and trying to do what they're doing this year in the playoffs, that's when they were winning. I mean, let's not act like if John Wall doesn't go down with a hand injury, I think Washington's in the Eastern Conference Finals last year.
Well,
and maybe giving Cleveland a run because Cleveland was banged up.
Watching Cleveland play the Wizards fast pace was it was visibly obvious that the Cavs could not keep up with him. But then, so Tim, you wanted to talk about pace and if it translate to the game. And so I just looked at pace and defensive and offensive efficiency in that. The top six teams in pace, the Suns are actually number one, Tim.
I know.
Number two is Kings, Warriors, Washington, Boston, and Houston. And none of them have a great defensive efficiency. The only two that are like noteworthy are the Warriors and Boston.
Well, that's what made the Warriors so great last year. Is they were running this insanely fast offense while being amazing on defense, which is something you just don't really have.
And Steph Curry said it himself the other day. You know, he got asked the question about how do you feel about everybody trying to copy the Warrior style of play, and Steph Curry hit it on the head. He said they don't have the personnel
luck,
so it's not going to matter. It's kind of like good luck. You know, Golden State works because they have Draymond Green, who can be that defensive force and really make an impact at the five, because they have Andre Iguodala, who's one of the best wing defenders in the league still, and because they probably have the greatest shooter of all time on their team. So, but the blueprint is there. It's just, it's finding the personnel. The blueprints are great, and everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth. But the fact of the matter is, you can try to recreate the Warriors' success all you want. If you don't have Draymond Green and Steph Curry, it's not going
to
work.
You're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Hit us up on Twitter at Drive and Dish NBA. Let's get into random NBA player.
You know what they say. The more you know, the more you know you don't know.
Want to know a little secret about education? It'll improve your sex life.
It's random NBA player highlights on the Drive and Dish podcast.
This week's random NBA player of the week is Hall of Famer Dolph Shays. Shays grew up playing high school ball in the Bronx before attending New York University, where he played between 1944 and 1948 and was an All-American. Shays was drafted in 1948 for the NBL by the New York Knicks and the Tri-Cities Blackhawks. The Blackhawks then traded his rights to the Syracuse Nationals, where he would play his ball after they offered him more money than the Knicks did. The Nationals would then join the NBA the following season, Shays making an immediate impact and was known for his two-handed set shot that opponents call Sputnik as it arced so high. Shays standing at 6'7", a tall figure for basketball during that time period. He would play from 1948 through 1964, playing only for the Syracuse Nationals, except for his final season when the franchise moved to Philadelphia and became today's Philadelphia 76ers. Shays was a 12-time All-Star, 6-time NBA All-First Team player, and was selected to the All-NBA second team 6 times. When he retired in 1964, he held the NBA records for games played, foul shots made, foul shots attempted, attempting personal fouls, and was second in scoring and third in rebounds. He was elected to the Hall of Fame in 1972 and was named one of the NBA's 50 greatest players in 1996. Prior to retiring, he did spend one season as a player coach for the Sixers in 1964 before spending three more seasons as the team's head coach, winning Coach of the Year in 1966. He also did win a championship in 1955 with the Nationals. It's the franchise's only title in Syracuse. Sadly, Dolph passed away last week on December 10th after a battle with cancer. He was 87 years old. Ladies and gentlemen, your random NBA player of the week, Dolph Shays.
Given a lot of talk on this podcast, the process, and we promise you guys we wouldn't talk about the Sixers again for a couple of episodes. But
then everything happened.
Then everything happened, and it is what it is. So, in a move that kind of seems like the owners are abandoning the process, was bringing on Jerry Colangelo, which is a step above Sam Hinkie, as he will be the president of basketball operations, Sam Hinkie being the general manager. And if you look at Jerry Colangelo, you know, he's with the Suns and he was with the Raptors, and he signed Andre Bargnani to a $50 million contract and then kind of left the Sixers or the, excuse me, the Raptors middling as a you know, a bottom team in the or really mediocre team in the East. And it's one of those things where my first thought on this was, is that Sam Hinkie presented to the owners of the Sixers two separate plans. One, which is doing what you guys are doing, and that is bottoming out and hoping to get that star, that franchise player. And the other one was kind of doing what they had done already, building through a combination of the draft and through free agency, but that the owner specifically wanted to be great and not good. And it seems to me like they are throwing him under the bus in this when they agreed and chose this plan. It's not like this is the only plan he offered. They chose it.
You're right. And the ownership has been very, very supportive, to say the least, at this point, because, you know, the fans aren't turning out the way they would if the Sixers were better. The income isn't there as much. Now, granted, let me start this by saying the Sixers have quadrupled their value since Josh Harris, and the rest of the ownership group took over. So it's not, you know, Josh Harris as a businessman is known for taking, quote, sunken properties and rebuilding them. And I think the Sixers have done a good job of that. And I think the Sixers, in terms of the culture, you know, there's a new practice facility getting built next year. And I think they've really done a good job of embracing analytics and embracing advanced stats and embracing, you know, players' health and all these types of things and creating a culture. I think the hire of, because I've had a long time to think about this, and there are a lot of conflicting feelings that I said on Twitter. I hope that the worst case scenario for me is that this is a power play, that Colangelo will take over, and that the Sixers will get back to a 500 team, and that's where we'll stay. And that's what I had to watch for the better half of a decade after the 2001 run to the finals with AI. And God, that is more soul-sucking than any tanking will ever be to me.
Right.
To know that your basketball team completely irrelevant for a decade. No one talked about it. Other than Andre Iguodala getting robbed of the dunk contest in 2006, when did you hear about the Sixers at all during that decade? Seriously.
Not much.
Never. Terms of national. No, don't say not much. It's never.
The problem I have with this whole thing is that Adam Silver apparently stepped in
There's conflicting reports that,
right.
The reports now are that they came to him seeking help on essentially turning around the franchise a little bit.
The report, then I'm cool with it. But if he stepped in and said, look, you guys...
Well, give us the one pick then. Rig the draft and give us the one pick.
Right, but the problem I have is Jerry hadn't been talking to the Sixers. This whole thing happened over a span of 10 days.
No, and the reports say that Josh Harris had reached out to Adam Silver to make the connection. And if you're to believe them at what they say, then that's what
then
it
fine.
Is. And this is where, because I mean, again, I don't love the leak stepping into things either, but this is where I'm at. I think the Jerry Colangelo was a hire too, because for better or for worse, and this is where I'll take, for those of you who say that I'm not constructive of the process, the only thing that I haven't liked about the Sam Hinkie era is that the Sixers as a brand have taken a big hit.
Ugh.
People think we're a wasteland. People think that we don't treat our players well. People don't think agents aren't happy because we're not throwing money at their players, and owners aren't happy because we don't pull our weight of the share. You know, Philadelphia is a major sports market and we don't pull our revenue sharing in, and that's fine. I think Jerry Colangelo is here to be the face of the Sixers. I mean, this is a Hall of Famer. This is the guy who's in charge
proven
of Team
winner,
USA
yeah.
basketball. This is a guy who has great reps with a lot of people. So what I'm hoping on the surface is that Jerry's coming in here to do kind of the eye test things, if you will, to rebuild relationships with agents, to rebuild that. I just want Hinkie still running everything behind the scenes, because the fact of the matter is, and Zach Lowe tweeted this, and speaking of Zach Lowe, if a culture change, if you see it, Sam Hinkie just gave a huge one-on-one interview with Zach Lowe this week. That never happens. Sam
mm-hmm.
Hinkie never gives interviews. And he said, he maintained in the interview that I am in charge of this still. This is still my rebuild. We're trying to build something great. You know, the fact of the matter is the Sixers' line of thinking has not been wrong. It's the fact of the matter is they've had a few bad breaks. Joel Embiid getting hurt is a huge setback. The fact that Dario was overseas,
Michael Carter Williams was
Michael Carter Williams being terrible in a terrible draft was a bit of a setback. But you got to look at the
KJ McDaniels. I mean, I'm not harping, but it's part of my problem with building through the draft, and you and I talked about this a bit off the mic yesterday, Kevin, is that it's just, it doesn't guarantee anything.
Well, this is the thing. When you're building through the draft, you're swinging for home runs, and a lot of the times you're going to strike
out.
But
I think fans knew that, and I think Sixers fans have embraced that. We right. know that fact. But the fact of the matter is, we talk about swinging for the fences, but if you do not have a superstar in the NBA, you are not going to win anything.
Well, and that's, and I mean, if you are,
I'm not satisfied with playoff runs. If you, I want banners.
Right.
I haven't seen the Sixers as a franchise, haven't won since 1983. I want a trophy. I want a Warriors moment. I want a Spurs moment. I want a Heat moment.
And if you're a Phillies,
that's what I want. I want the team to be good, but I don't want to be stuck in the limbo of mediocrity. I don't want to gamble that maybe one day there's a Harden trade out there. I don't want to gamble that some team is going to be stupid and let a Steve Nash walk out the door and go to Phoenix the way Dallas did, where you stumble upon a superstar. You know, it's just, you have to be, you want to maximize your chances, and I think the Sixers did a really good job of maximizing their chances. I think some of the execution wasn't done the right way, and that's what I think Colangelo's here for. I just hope that this isn't a total reverse of course. I still trust the process. We still have four picks. We still have Dario. 2016 was the make or break year for Hinkie always. If the Sixers don't improve next year, and I've said this from day one, if the Sixers don't improve next year and we don't see tangible growth, I'm done with Hinkie. I'm off the process. You've been given your chance. Like, the thinking is right, and people need to stay course, and just everyone needs to relax. Like, making adjustments, I don't think it's a power play like everyone wants to say. Jerry Colangelo is 76 years old and is going to be living in Phoenix. Would a 76-year-old living in Phoenix be in charge of a basketball team if he was going to make a power play? No, he wouldn't. He'd have to move to Philadelphia. He's not going to be there day to day. And I think it brings us the clout outside of what we currently are. It brings the eye test sort of things. And I think, and the other report with this is that the Sixers are looking to hire Mike D'Antoni, which just broke last night. And in the case of Mike D'Antoni, everyone's like, oh, he's going to be the coach now. And look, they're totally giving up on their plan. The Sixers just signed Brett Brown to a two-year extension last night, which is the right move, because Brett Brown has frankly been a saint for the last 3 years, and he's been so instrumental in terms of player development that he needs to be here, and he's their coach. D'Antoni coming in is just another voice. It's all about, when you have a professional basketball team, it's all about having the most voices in the room. You know, the three of us, when we record this show and we record this podcast, have creative discussions about what we want to do, what we like, what we don't like, and how we put these shows together. And these shows would not be as great as if one person called all the shots. It wouldn't work that well.
Right.
You need more voices in the room. You need someone to say, you know what, Sam, maybe you are really good at the numbers, but maybe you did underestimate the people value. And there's reports going around that the Sixers want to bring out Elton Brand back, who is a high character guy who really helped this team when he was with us earlier in terms of character, and can help build some of these guys. You know, maybe we were wrong in that aspect, and that minor changes need to be made. But I don't think minor tweaks should totally destroy the future this team has and where I think we can be and what we're still going for here. And that's, we're going for a championship. If you're not playing the game to win a championship, I frankly don't know why you're playing the game.
So the Sixers have taken tanking to a whole nother level, blah, 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 all that crap. I get it. The owners had a chance to change the vote
and the
way that the draft is decided. And I totally get it, because it's not just about revenue share as much as, you know, the TV share. Like, the Sixers aren't on TV, yet they're getting the same revenue, and the Sixers are going to other arenas. Nobody's coming out, you know, that kind of thing. And so it bothers owners. I get it. But they had a chance to change the system, and they chose not to. Now, that being said, 13 of the owners did vote for that change. So you can't harp on all
of the owners.
No, there
was a lot of them that didn't vote.
Yeah, but that's not enough. They were all barking like it was going to be a 27-3 vote, and then everybody backed off.
I mean, and even big teams, like, I think the Thunder were on the side with the Sixers.
The Thunder should be. They built their whole freaking team because of Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden in the draft. If the Thunder were to bitch and complain about the Sixers trying to build through the draft, they need to go look at themselves in the mirror.
Small market teams need
The draft.
They need the draft in order to build, and that's just the way it is.
You have to. The fact of the matter is some NBA destinations aren't as attractive to other people. I mean, if you're an 18-year-old fresh out of college with a whole pot of money, and I'm not dissing this city, but where would you rather spend your winter? Freezing in Milwaukee or on South Beach? And that's not a shot at Milwaukee at all. Like, everybody that I know that's ever been to Milwaukee talks about it as a great city, and they have a great culture of basketball. But the lifestyle option is always going to be a thing, and that's where the draft plays in. So the teams like Milwaukee and teams who are in these, you know, Oklahoma City, and who may not be in the premier destinations, have a chance to win, because they just, you know, it shouldn't be where the big market wins every year. These small market fans are as great as any other fans out there, sometimes better than the big market fans.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so can we promise our listeners that for the next three episodes, barring breaking news of some sort, we are not going to talk about the Sixers?
Dude, I agree. Something's going to happen. I didn't want to talk about them this week, but
no,
something happened. Like,
now, barring breaking news.
Barring a breaking news, we promise to stay away for at least three episodes.
Please, for my health. It's for me. I'm sick of talking about my own basketball team.
Well, I feel like these episodes are starting to get a little bit redundant.
It is what it is.
We've talked about the process and what to like and what
you
can criticize.
You're either
going to
like it or you're not at this point. There's no...
And so there's nothing new that can be said about it.
Right.
You're listening to the Drive-In Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Cousart. Check out our websites, driveindishpodcast.com. So one of the main complaints we get from our listeners, and we appreciate all the good and bad feedback we get. Genuinely, we do appreciate it. I know that it gets, you know, we joke about the Sixers, and Tim, for those of you who are first time listening, is a huge Suns fan, and so we often talk about the Suns on the show, and we promise this is 100% because of the news, but we are going to talk a little Suns here, and that's Markieff Morris. He's been in the rumors a lot recently. It seems like the Suns are ready to move on, and I guess the question is now is, Tim, as a Suns fan, what do you think is going to happen with Markieff Morris? You know, do you think he's going to get traded? Where do you think he's going to end up? What do you think the Suns can realistically get back from Markieff Morris? You know, I'm going to let you take the floor here.
Well, that being said, we don't talk about the Suns nearly as much as the Sixers because, better or for worse, the Suns aren't a storyline.
The Sixers are a storyline.
There's two Sixers fans in the room, and so the Suns conversation can be a bit one-sided, so I don't even find it fun. When we get a guest on that can talk Suns, I really enjoy it. But for the most part, with you two guys, like, I could kind of take it or leave it. So it's, you know, it's not sugarcoated. We don't talk about the Suns quite as much as we talk about the Sixers. But talking about Markieff Morris, to give a little breakdown of the situation, is that Markieff Morris has been playing like garbage this year. His net differential offensively and defensively is terrible. His shooting percentage is down. He doesn't look good on the court. We all know the crap that happened over the summer. He's disgruntled. They traded his brother. They were trying to replace him with LaMarcus Aldridge. We get it. But the Suns kept him in the starting lineup for the vast majority of the season.
Then he got replaced by better players.
Well, no. And then what happened is he still wasn't playing well, and I don't remember who they were playing against. It was on this last road trip the Suns were on, and the Suns were down by two with, I don't know, 3 seconds left on the shot clock. The opposing team was taking free throws. Markieff Morris gets a technical foul about where he would stand to where he was standing, and so the opposing team got to shoot a technical foul. Blah. It was almost like he was intentionally trying to lose the game for the Suns.
Right.
The next game, he sat out with a bone bruise in his knee. Fine. I get it. The next game, he got a coach's decision to do not play. The next game, he played 7 minutes. Then once the Suns got back home, he was out with a sinus infection.
Mm.
Then the Suns played the Portland Trailblazers, and doing as the Suns do, had a lead in the fourth and lost last night. Markieff Morris was back for the team at shoot around, having recovered from his sinus infection, quote unquote. He received another do not play. There have been rumors recently going out that the Suns are going to trade him. That being said, Ryan McDonough got on the radio, and when asked if the Suns were shopping Markieff Morris, his line was, "We aren't necessarily shopping him."
But the thing is, like, and then they asked the players. Everyone's kind of given a different answer. Like, it's not all the same.
Well, on December 15th, all the players that were signed this last summer are open for trades. If the Suns weren't going to trade him. They would be playing him because he's not a garbage player. They would be trying to repair the relationship and build his confidence.
Right. Like, he's still averaging about 11 points, 5 rebounds, but he's shooting a 38.6%, which isn't great, and 27 from 3, which is obviously a lot less than last year. But because, you know, they were the whole trade rumor started in the summer when he wasn't playing. Like, has him playing at least brought back maybe some of his value, or has it hurt it even more?
Yeah, no, I think it's brought it back because he came up, he showed up, he didn't complain, he's not playing well, but I think any opposing GM understands you're looking at a player that is in a situation he doesn't like, he's not motivated, all that garbage, but he was doing all the right things in the interviews. He said, I want to be here, I'm just happy they got the win. He's playing the media game the way he should, which is essentially what you want.
Well, because someone probably talked to him for sure, but so...
The Suns are trading Markieff Morris. It's done.
The team that has been talked about, I feel like this is the one I've seen the most, the Pelicans.
The Pelicans and the Rockets are the two big suitors.
It makes sense for the Pelicans. I mean, if the Pelicans, the Pelicans need front court depth because right now beyond AD, I mean, you're basically your next guy is Amir Sheik. I think we can all agree that Keith is an upgrade to that.
Well, he's a power forward.
Well,
and
they're talking about they want to trade for Ryan Anderson pretty much straight up because the contracts are pretty close, age is pretty close. But Ryan Anderson is outplaying Markieff Morris by a lot.
Ryan Anderson, the only caveat with Ryan Anderson is you accept the inherent injury risk, but he's been healthy this year, and when he's healthy, he is a good player.
And the thing with Markieff is Markeef's ceiling is probably higher than Anderson. Like, Anderson is what he is. Like, you're probably not going to get too much more from him. Like, he'll give you, like he gave the Pelicans 2 30-point games. I think it was, like, in the past 2 weeks, which is kind of crazy. But, like, and he can do that, but, like, I think Markieff Morris has more upside, but Ryan Anderson is, you know what you're getting, I guess.
Ryan Anderson is a unrestricted free agent at the end of the year.
And that's what they don't want to have to, the Pelicans don't want to have to pay him.
Well, I don't think they mind paying him. I think it's if they get an indication from him he's not going to resign,
then they got to
trade
him.
And they can also, Markieff Morris is on a 4-year, $32 million contract.
Which is really friendly.
Oh, it's incredibly team friendly. So for the Suns, do you trade for Ryan Anderson because the Suns have John Luer and Mirza Teletovic, who are also unrestricted free agents at the end of the year? So you have three power forwards that you're going to need to choose between. The other one that's coming up is the Houston Rockets with Terrence Jones. Now, the money doesn't really quite work out on that. So the Terrence Jones is making a little over $2.5 million. Markieff Morris is making like $8 million. So there's talks of a three-team deal with the Jazz, where the Jazz and the Pistons can be brought into it too. Basically, there's like the Jazz are going to get a point guard. It's going to be it's not going to be a two-team trade. It's not going to be a one-on-one.
It'll be a few teams involved.
But the point is,
it's going to happen.
It's going to happen. The Suns aren't playing Markieff Morris. He got another DNP last night, and that's because you don't play players you're about to trade a lot of the time because you don't want him to get injured. And if they're about to trade him, what's the point of having him on the court when you could be developing some of your other players and figuring out who's playing well
especially
and who
if
isn't?
You're going to trade him.
So it's going to happen. And I just think being a Suns fan and being somebody that has watched, we drafted Markieff Morris, we developed him, and it's a shame it worked out this way, but I kind of feel like Derrick Rose, like a Bulls fan, where I just kind of want it to be over.
Just get it over with and get him out.
Yeah, even if we get pennies on the dollar, like, I want the situation to be done with, and I want to be looking at my team.
Well, it's got to be a distraction to the Suns in general.
Well, storylines in general are a distraction. It's just kind of like, you know, it's the way how I feel about the Sixers at this point. It's like we spent all this time talking about a storyline, and it's great, and we have to talk about it, and it's a huge thing, but you just, eventually it gets old. I feel like in the case of Markieff Morris, we've been talking about it since the offseason, and you want to just get back to basketball. The Suns have a lot of positive things right now going for their basketball team. Brandon Knight and Eric Bledsoe so look like a great backcourt. You know, they're getting contributions from other guys, and you want to focus on, you know, you want to focus on what you have going forward. You're not worried about, you know, you just want to get the situation over with.
And when you're a sports fan, you want to look at your team and know that every player wants to be there because you want the players on the court to root for that win. Like, you're sitting at home,
right,
staying up, not sleeping as well as you should be, going into work tired the next morning, rooting for that win yourself. You know, laying in bed last night, tired as hell, and I got the Suns game on my iPad. I'm having a hard time keeping my eyes open.
I hate that feeling. Yeah, I know. I've been there.
But you want the players. You want the players on the court to be rooting for that win, like you are.
It's like that college team that's like been dubbed the best bench celebration. Like,
Right, exactly.
But it's like almost entertaining because the bench gets so excited that they scored a three or a clutch three or got a dunk. They get really excited, and you want the players to be doing that. You don't want the bench to just be like, huh, well, that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just doesn't translate. And I agree. As a fan, you want the players to be as invested as you are.
Yeah. So pennies on the dollar at this point, I don't care. But anyone listening, the Suns are trading Keith.
You've got mail.
Gather around, everybody.
Oh, boy.
All right, so the first question in mailbag comes this week from Josh Puttick. He asks, with 14 points per game and 5 rebounds per game, is Will Barton an under-the-radar pick for sixth man or the most improved awards?
Oh, dude, he's been... Kevin, I'm sorry. I know you don't like fantasy talk, but he's been my absolute favorite pickup in fantasy. He gets... Yes. My answer is yes.
see, my thing is this most improved player, and
but
I get
it's going to be Curry.
I get the argument against it, but I'm going for Rondo, and I realize that he's a player that was great at one point, had a really bad year, so it's more of revitalization year. Rather than traditional most improved players, a player who wasn't very good that now is. But, I mean, you know, Will Barton's been fine, but Rondo is fun to watch.
He said he hadn't dunked in like 7 months or something like that beforehand.
Dude, just the way he runs an offense and the way he some of those like behind the back passes, he'll get a steal. Some of these like behind the back passes and throwing the ball through another player's leg and then continuing to dribble.
That falling pass, dude. The falling like half court pass.
Oh, dude,
man.
It is so.
I wonder,
is Rondo a top 5 point guard this year?
We actually got hit back up on, you asked that on Twitter, and someone said he thought he has always been.
Well, that's not true.
No, this in the context of this year, it's fair.
Yeah, this year, I think he's the top in assist, right?
He is, yeah.
Yeah, so...
He's logged more triple-doubles than any other player, yeah. And he has had... He's been one rebound shy of a triple-double 4 times this year.
Jeez, man. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you gotta put him
he's
in the top 5.
He's out this year, absolutely.
But
no,
like
Will Barton's been great. I think he's definitely an under-the-radar player for sure. All right, so our next question comes from Charlie Burns. Charlie says, I read this article by Zach Lowe about possible Carmelo trades. I believe the Knicks got some combo of Ariza, Ty Lawson, and Terrence Jones, and some draft picks. What do you think of this deal, and do you think Melo gets traded?
Do you think Melo gets traded thing, just Melo has a non-trade clause on his contract.
Right.
So until he signs off on it, and he's not going to, because Melo didn't pick New York because he wanted to win. He picked New York because that's where he wanted to live.
Yeah, but he's got the money now, though.
Yeah,
the
thing is, his wife has a business there. His kids are going to school there. Like, he picked New York because that's where his home is.
Also, I think if I read correctly, if he waits till 2018 or something like that, he'll get a bonus.
Right.
Like
he's not going to sign off on it. He doesn't want to go anywhere. He's happy where he's living. He has all the money in the world.
The Knicks just have to start making the transition to Porzingis and let Melo be there and be their second. I think at this point, Melo's still scoring, but he's not doing it at as high rate as he used to. So I think you have to almost make the transition to Porzingis being... You know, teaching him to be that go-to guy. I
don't think Ariza, Lawson, and Terrence Jones and picks are a terrible deal for Melo as Melo declines. I think that it's kind of a win-win situation for both because I think if you're the Knicks in this case, you need to... I mean, Porzingis is clearly your guy that you're building around.
Right.
And unfortunately, the timeline just doesn't work where Melo will still be... Melo, by the time Porzingis, you expect to take the leap and mm-hmm. be a great player, probably won't be that good anymore.
No, Melo's going to be odd. The timeline doesn't fit at all.
I think if they
could do the trade, sure, but they can't.
I'm not of the belief that you can't get Melo to waive that no trade clause. I think you absolutely could. And I think in the case of...
If it's a contender...
He's only got a few years left. He's got his money... And I understand that Lala has a business in New York, and it's like that doesn't need to go anywhere. And if you have to, you know, if you have to move away from New York, you know, you do what you have to do.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't think
he would put a no trade clause in there and stay in New York with a crappy team if he was willing to go somewhere else, or else he would have. He had the choice to go anywhere he wanted.
No, I understand, and it's valid. Like, I don't want to make it seem like it's not valid, but we'll see. All right, so the next question comes from Crazy Stats, our friends over there, and they ask, as they preface this by saying Sixers question in all caps, smiley face. So we apologize. But he says, as Jerry joined the team front office, Saric and maybe Embiid play next year and maybe Simmons as the draft pick in 2016, what can we expect next season from this team?
The biggest starting lineup of all time.
The Towers, baby! The Towers!
The Sixers are going to roll out a lineup of Dario Saric, Jahlil Okafor, Nerlens Noel, Joel Embiid
and Ben Simmons.
Tony Simmons.
They would be the biggest lineup of all
time.
That
would be the coolest. I want to
see that.
It's
like Monstars from Space Jam.
Right.
And well, especially with Embiid getting yoked the way he is now. Like, damn.
I'm not. Oh, God.
If Embiid plays,
he's going to be great, but I'm not. It's a pure luxury at this point.
Right.
I think they'll be better. I think they'll, obviously, with all the picks and with Dario, they'll be a better competitive basketball team, but they're not going to light the world on fire. I think that was the quickest way I could answer that question.
Right.
So our final question comes from Andrew Morgan. It's a two-part question. He asks, the first basketball question is, WTF is up with Jeremy Lin's hair?
Dude, his hair is amazing.
Tim,
which one? You like the new hairstyle? The one that's like back in the little ponytail?
Why do you think
a hipster. You would like that.
Yeah,
not
of course.
A hipster.
Tim is a hipster. And why do you like, you like the Hawks' terrible jerseys? You like Jeremy Lin's terrible hair?
No, the Hawks' jerseys are good. It's the hair I can't.
What did you tell your barber? Did you say shave everything except the top of my head but leave enough to make a man bun? Where is Jeremy Lin's guidance? Is there someone not telling him that this looks
his
bad?
His hair is as exciting as the team right now.
He has style, and you're talking to somebody who has style. That statement, of course I like his look.
There's a collective groan from everyone
You worn your wood bow tie yet?
I put it on yesterday. I was going out to eat dinner, and it just like... It wasn't quite fancy enough, but it goes perfectly with my gray shirt and my silver glasses. Okay. So I'm really excited to wear the outfit to work.
Okay.
And I'm wearing new glasses today, by the way. No one said anything. I wore new glasses every day this week.
The amount of glasses that you have.
You have 12 pairs and they all kind of look similar.
That's not true at all. They're different colors.
No, the one you can't
sizes.
Even see. The one's see-through.
Right. Look at these right here. These are a black and white.
Tim has glasses that says Phoenix Suns on the
I do. Those are my fall glasses.
Anyway, so the final half of the question from Andrew is, who is your favorite comic book character for the three of you and why?
Oh, Iron Man. I like Iron
Man. Why?
Dude, I honestly don't know. I've just always liked Iron Man as a kid. So, Iron Man.
I'm a lot like Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes.
That's your comic book character?
That would be Tim's comic
really?
Book character.
That's the most hipster answer of all time.
Well, I just, you know, we're fitting. We're both really smart and funny and good looking.
There's another collective groan. I got you guys.
Man, good Lord. I don't know. I guess Batman. Right, no, you know what? I really like The Flash. I don't know why. But it's always the super speed thing would be kind of cool. Probably because I'm not that fast.
He's not. Kevin and I once did this race at halftime for some basketball game we were at.
It was NBA and Jax.
Yeah, NBA and Jax. And we had to put on these...
Hawks Pelicans, man.
Yeah, these...
No, this was 2 years ago.
Wizards Pelicans.
Yeah.
What did we have to put on?
We
had to put on these burrito costumes.
It was a Mose promotion.
Somewhere.
And let me... Should we just tell the whole story? I feel like we're at this point now.
No, it's fine. But I will say, I made it from one side of the court to the other before, like, you made it to... Like, I whooped you. You really are not that fast.
Yeah, no, I'm not that fast, but it's fine because I beat you in arcade basketball by, like, 30 points that night. Absolutely. Facts only. Let's not get it twisted
right,
here.
Don't get twisted. That was a close game.
That was not a close game.
I was draining
Tim,
shots.
You were getting absolutely waxed. But thank you, everyone, for sending in your mailbag questions. We really appreciate it. As always, ask us on Twitter at Drive and Dish NBA or like us on Facebook.com/Drive and Dish NBA. Search Drive and Dish NBA podcast and let us know your mailbag questions there.
And thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Drive and Dish podcast. If you want to follow us on Twitter, hit us up at Drive and Dish NBA. You can follow me personally at Justin C. on the air. You can follow Tim at Radio Tim NBA, and you can follow Kevin at Refuse to Lose. And leave us a review on iTunes. It not only strokes our ego, but it helps us move up the ranks so that other fans can find us because, you know, if you like us, so will everybody else.
You're terrible. It strokes our ego, but I know. Yeah, seriously, if you're not an Apple listener, we are on Android and every other type of phone out there. You can check us out on Stitcher, the Google Play Store, Player FM, TuneIn. We're hoping to get on Spotify soon, but seriously, we're everywhere. Or you can just check out our Podbean site itself. Either way, check that out, and you can have all your Drive and Dish content.
I think we've done enough dancing for today, so why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Starside.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Get in the hole!
Da-da-da-da-da. Hey! Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da-da.
Hey! Let's go while we're young.
All right.